Welcome to Attention Talk Radio, your ADHD information station where we help those with ADHD pay attention to attention, with your host, ADHD and attention coach, Jeff Topper.
Welcome, everybody. It's really about the truth, isn't it? I'm your host, ADHD and attention coach, Jeff Copper, and our topic tonight is your ADHD child's truth. And with us in our virtual studio is Penny Williams. Quickly, tonight is January the 4th in the year 2017 at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We are thrilled to kick off the New Year's with Penny, with what I think you're going to find is a spectacular interview. I absolutely adore Penny and what she's all about, and I think we're going to share some great insights. Real quickly, tonight we don't have a lot of announcements other than to say that the Women Palooza virtual online conference coming around February the 6th to the 11th in the year 2017. To learn more about that, go to ADHDpalooza.com. And I have to tell you, the Linda Rogley and Terry Maitland is putting that stuff on, and I'm absolutely flattered they invited me to be on and talk about ADHD issues related to women. I give all the credit to the guests I had on Attention Talk Radio over the years to learn kind of what's going on. It's a spectacular event. They did it last year. I encourage you to go sign up for this, even if you're not a female. But if you are a female, a double whammy to you, because it's chock full of information. There's a great guest, and I think the majority of people that are actually presenting, we've actually had on Attention Talk Radio, so you know why I can't not endorse it. Really quickly, tonight, we're thrilled with our relationship with the children and adults with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. They are the organization that advocates on behalf of those with ADHD, and we cherish their support. This show is actually being brought to you by Dad. We've got a tip for you that we're going to run in honor of them, if you will. So let's roll the tape. We'll get on with the meat of the show.
Want school mornings to be stress-free? Planning the night before can make mornings run more smoothly for you and your child. Place a basket or box by the front door for backpacks, lunch boxes, coats, jackets, and whatever else your child might need to grab on their way out. For more tips to get the school year started right, go to the CHAAD website, www.help4adhd.org. That's www.help4adhd.org.
Thank you, Chad, for that helpful temp, and thank you for putting on the show. With that, again, we're going to start our interview with Penny Williams. Penny is actually fascinating. This call was pre-recorded given the holidays that we're going to kind of put on, and I got to tell you, this is a spectacular interview. What we hope to discern from you is really reality from what you think it is, and to really kind of meet people where they are. If you're listening to this, we hope you're called to it. I had a couple ahas in the middle of the show, and we hope that you enjoy it. So let's roll the tape. We're here with Penny Williams, who guides and mentors parents raising kids with ADHD and or autism. She's the parent of a son with ADHD and autism and the author of 3 award-winning books on parenting kids with ADHD, Boys Without Instructions, What to Expect When Parenting Children with ADHD, and The Insider's Guide to ADHD. Penny is the current editor of Parenting ADHD and Autism.com, founder and instructor of the Parenting ADHD and Autism Academy, and a frequent contributor on parenting and children with ADHD for Attitude Magazine, Healthline, WNC Parent, and other parenting and special needs publications. She's been contacted for interviews on the subject of parenting a child with ADHD many times, being quoted on publications like Chicago Tribune, Parenting.com, Live Science, NBCToday.com, Parenting Section, and the High Dessert Plaza, I think that's what it is. Anyway, and with that, Penny, welcome to the show.
Hi, Jeff. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. I'm really excited about this.
Well, I'm really excited about this. You know, Penny, at Attention Talk Radio, we really like to pay attention to attention. It's really kind of fascinating because attention's like this thing is that you're guided to, but sometimes your brain plays tricks on yourself and you pay attention to stories that you tell yourself. And some of the things that we do is easy to illuminate. Others are easy to say, but hard for really kind of people to get. And our topic today is hearing your ADHD child's truth. And I actually stumbled on this and you by accident through another organization. And so that kind of kicked things off, hearing your child's truth. Can you just tell us from your perspective kind of what's all that about, and then we'll kind of get into a good conversation about it.
Yeah, I think it all boils down to really discovering and taking into account what is true for your own child individually, their personal truth in that moment. So if they're struggling with, say, a social interaction, what's true for them at that time? Well, if they have ADHD, then likely their social skills aren't as developed as their peers that they're struggling to interact with at that moment. So it takes into account your child's capability, their diagnoses, what their particular weaknesses are, but also what their strengths are, and you know how you can propel them into success. So it's really looking at exactly what kind of motivates them and why they have particular behaviors. And then that helps you when you're seeing that really quick, really clearly, to address what's going on in a more effective manner.
So this, I think the epicenter of this, and I'm talking out loud here, is really about observation, because it's not really, because I think sometimes people read some things and this is a child and they focus in on that, but really understanding what's true for your child, what you described, is really kind of observing them and their individual capabilities, which I'm not so sure people really stop and study that. What are your thoughts on that?
We don't. And I think it's something that we need to do. I think in a lot of cases, you know, for a neurotypical child, it's really a lot easier because they behave more like we expect them to. But when you're talking about a child with ADHD or even autism, you have to understand a more appropriate expectation. You know, they're not going to behave in the way that we all are kind of programmed to expect. So in looking at their truth, you really have to pay attention more to what's happening for them in their mind and their body. You have to take the time and the interest to learn a lot about ADHD, not just what it is and that it's a deficit of attention and sometimes there's hyperactivity. There's a million more pieces to it than that. There's executive functioning, there's emotional sensitivity and regulation, there's often coexisting conditions, comorbid conditions, like anxiety and depression and learning disabilities. And all of these things come together and are woven together to kind of define what's really true for your child. And in order to do your best for them under that culmination of things is to really dig deep and understand those things and be aware. And also I think, you know, one tool that's really important for parents in being able to discover your child's truth and what might be true for them in a particular situation is learning to remain calm and patient and detached, which is really hard and we all struggle with it. There's definitely a learning curve to it, but that's so, so important, because if you're reactive in a situation where your child is already emotionally reactive, neither one of you have clarity anymore, and it's not, you know, you're not going to come out of that situation well in that instance.
Wow. This is very, what I really like about what you said is the patience and the emotional type thing, and actually acknowledging it's not the easiest thing to do. After interviewing Dr. Barkley, him talking so much about ADHD as a self-regulation issue, not so much as a deficit of attention, and he describes it as you have the automatic brain, which is the impulsive reptilian brain, and the executive functioning brain, which is really effortful, where you have to actually step in and override that automatic response or that automatic brain. And
right.
I kind of like that model. And with what you've just described is more and more I tell people it's like the parent actually has to exhibit some level of self-regulation because they get frustrated and they've got to pause and override that urge to get frustrated, kind of go out. And so it's kind of funny. I talk about parents.
Absolutely.
It's as hard for you to deal with it from a self-regulation issue as it is for that ADHD kid. So just
I just throw
that out there. And so you can kind of – it's almost like you're simulating the experience in a different way because it really kind of comes down to your ability to pause and self-regulate that. But I also want to tell a story because, Penny, I'd like to get your thoughts on this. When we haven't discussed this in advance, but I want to kind of talk about something that I've learned and share some science about observation and illustrate what we mean by it's your child's truth. So years ago, I was interviewing Dr. Barkley, and he was telling me at the time that play is very important for kids because it's all about executive functioning, organizing, and sequence. And I talk about the story where imagine a kid is on a carpet and they've got some Legos and they're building something. And the cool thing about a three-year-old is it's developmentally appropriate for that three-year-old to be talking out loud to themselves. I mean, it's most people self-talk, but we can hear it. And as you watch this kid, they're talking to himself as they put together developmentally between age 3 and 5, that self-talk becomes privatized. It moves into their head. And we know that as a fact. And play actually moves into their head as they kind of get older. But those with ADHD have a more limited working memory, and they have a hard time juggling these thoughts in their mind, and often they have to get it out, and many of them talk. As a coach, we call them verbal processors. I'm not really sure that's the right label, but it's just something that we do. And so as a result of that, not to talk is not to think. And so there's many kids, and I coach adults all the time, where if they've got a problem solved, they need to be talking out loud to somebody. And it's funny because the rest of the world confuses it because they're not having a conversation with them. They're talking to themselves. Like, you might be quiet and have the thoughts in your head. Theirs might be public.
Right.
It's the same thing, but you're confusing what's going on. So I'm sharing this because often I think, I can see a kid that's maybe 6 or 7 or whatever who talks, talk, and the parents are like, you need to be quiet. And you're actually not – your child's truth in that moment might be not to talk and it's not to think. And you're actually saying, you need to be quiet. You need to sit down and focus. And you're not dealing with your child's truth. And that is it's hard for him to think unless he's talking because he's got to get that outside of his head. So – as a coach, if you were to ask, how does it serve him? What's it doing for him? And you realize that, in fact, that's what's doing. It changes the game because you wouldn't send him off to do his homework all by himself. You would have him sit there and explain his homework to you. So I just your thoughts on this. Does this make sense to you?
It makes total sense. And, you know, in the way that I interact with parents, I often talk about the why and how important the why is. And I think that's the same thing that you're talking about is in order to change a behavior, we have to know why it's happening. If my son interrupts the conversation and I punish him every time, I take away a dollar of his allowance or whatever it might be, that is not as effective as if I look at why is he interrupting my conversation and teaching him those skills or giving him some coping mechanism. You know, maybe he thinks he's going to forget what he needs to tell me if he waits. And so we work out some strategy for that so he doesn't have to interrupt.
Yep.
That is going to affect change. Just punishing him every time makes him feel bad about himself, but it's not likely to build that skill or teach that coping mechanism that he needs in order to change the behavior for the long term.
So
I think it's the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. So at some point in time, we can change the words aloud, but that basic level of truth is if your child is doing something, I'm saying the same thing she did different back there, how's it serving them? What are they getting out of that? And if you can understand that puts you in a position to be able to work with the reality that it's serving them in some way and maybe kind of find an alternative. So, Penny, we need to go to a break real quick. You've got a great website, parentingadhdandautismacademy.com. Can you just tell us about that a little bit?
Yeah, I started that online academy to kind of give parents the information that I really felt was lacking. My son was diagnosed with ADHD 8 years ago at the age of 6. There was no guidebook. There was no step-by-step program. There was no system or, you know, really rote strategy on how to kind of attack the situation and improve things. And after struggling for a long time, reading everything I could, and when I was able to finally get to a better place and feel more effective for him, I could look back and see that there really were things that I needed to be doing from the start. There really was step by step that would have made the whole process easier. So I decided to pull that into a course. One of my books is on the same thing, and to really be able to help parents more. I don't want to see other parents struggle as much and as long as we did. And so I have some courses out there now, building more courses, completely online. So it works really well with parents' schedules and hectic, chaotic households and that sort of thing. So I'm really excited about it, and I hope that it's going to help a lot of families.
Absolutely. Everybody, that's Parenting ADHD and Autism Academy.com. And with that, we'll be right back after these messages.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
The average annual cost of attending college starts around $25,000. Students who have ADHD are at high risk of dropping out because they haven't learned the critical skills they need to succeed in school. Protect your investment with an Edge Foundation coach, specifically trained to help students with ADHD and executive function challenge make the transition from high school to college. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more, or call 206-632-9497 and use promo code EDGE to get your free college success guide.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
You deserve the best-trained ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
Managing ADHD is about pausing before you ponder and proceed. This opportunity to practice pausing is being brought to you by digcoaching.com. The Attention Talk Network has over 450 interviews and more than 210 hours of programming, which is overwhelming if you think about it. That's why I've made my list top 10 favorite Attention Talk radio interviews. Download the list at www.digcoaching.com/ATR.
And now back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody, to our great interview here with Penny Williams and hearing your child's ADHD truth. Trying to talk about this and illustrate it to really help parents kind of shift their attention a little bit. I have to say, what we're talking about today is not going to solve your problems, but it's going to change how you pay attention to them to put you on the right path to go find out what's going on. Because if you're just focused on how you think it is and you're not observing your own individual child with an open mind and maybe realizing that some of these behaviors that they do actually serve them in some way, you're swimming upstream. Whereas if you actually acknowledge what it is, as Penny was doing before the break, you can begin to work with it and deal with it because you know that there's something there. And again, I want to emphasize, this is really trying to help people learn to kind of pause and kind of view what's going on. And as Penny had described, this is not an easy thing for parents to do because it actually requires a level of self-regulation and a fair amount of work, because it's not simple just trying to discover something that's unique about your kid that nobody else can tell you. I got to believe, Penny, that you've had to do a lot of that yourself.
Oh, a ton. And I continue to. You know, my son was diagnosed 8 years ago. He was struggling probably for the last 9 since he started school, and it's been a learning process the entire time. And I think, you know, it always will be, because we all change on a regular basis. And so, you know, as things shift, there's another chance for rediscovery, and, you know, having an open mind to that is very helpful. I started out looking for a way to fix it because I'm a mom, and that was my instinct, was how can I fix this for my poor struggling kid? And I looked to fix it for like 2 years, and we were still struggling the same amount. And I finally realized that I was completely on the wrong path. I had the wrong perspective because there is no fix. Instead, my job is to understand him and what it's like to be him as much as I can, and then help him build skills, develop coping strategies, and become a successful adult. And it's more about the journey and not about changing who he is. Or what he struggles with.
Yeah, so when I'm coaching Penny, I'll talk about things, and I like to give people an attention exercise as best I can for them to experience or simulate it and get a really idea of what it's like to be that person. And before the break, we were talking about self-regulation, and the parents on this is another exercise I do when I'm trying to help people understand self-regulation and that automatic and executive functioning brain. And I particularly if it's a parent or a spouse, even the person with ADHD, I say, here's an exercise I want you to do. I want you to go home. I want you to completely prepare a meal, eat the meal, and clean up the meal using your less dominant hand. And the idea here is, if you actually think about it, the automatic brain is hardwired, in my case, to use the right hand. And so if I'm going to go through that exercise and I'm going to use my left hand, I either have got to focus so much on my left hand to override my brain's instinct to reach out with my right hand. What's funny is while I'm putting so much effort on that, it's taxing my working memory. So I begin to forget things that are there, and it's a real struggle. And I've actually had people I've worked with do that. Well, you know, I broke five dishes when I were doing that. And so either it's very effortful, it's very, very taxing, it very much slows you down, you forget things in the process, or you screw up and you keep going back to that automatic brain and keep using your right hand and having to make that mistake. And I say that frustration and that experience when you're using that left hand is not the exact experience of ADHD, but that's what self-regulation is all about. And if you can begin to understand that, there's a lot of empathy, and it can change the person with non-ADHD. So, oh, that's kind of what we're dealing with. And they can begin to think. They can approach a problem by thinking about that effortful type thing. And again, focusing on their truth and making that shift, I think, is about working with it as opposed to against it. Thoughts?
Right. And I think, you know, that illustration, that activity that you used really shows for parents how much work our kids put in every day just to come even a little bit close to what we expect from them, what school expects from them. You know, when we don't take into account their own personal truth, then we're expecting neurotypical behavior out of a child who's developmentally 2 to 3 years behind their peers, and they're never going to be able to achieve those expectations. So they're constantly working overtime as hard as they can, and it's using so much of their brain power and their focus to just try to walk that path that we're expecting from them, that it affects behavior, it affects cognitive ability. You know, I just read a great book on the effect of stress on our kids, especially at school, with learning challenges, and he describes Nowhere to Hide by Jerome Schultz. He describes in great detail how much that stress affects their cognitive function, their learning, their emotional regulation, everything. I mean, at a certain point, it's just going to shut everything down. So I think, you know, what you're talking about would be a great thing for parents to do, to really understand the amount of concentration and effort our kids are having to put out on a regular basis that their peers are not. And that, again, speaks to their truth.
Absolutely, absolutely. And which I got some more attention exercises to kind of jog the memory or get the parents out there thinking here in a second, but we needed to go to another break. Again, check out Penny's website, Parenting ADHD and Autism Academy.com. And with that, we'll be right back after these messages.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is TimeTimer.com.
You can't go off to college with them, but we can. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more how an EDGE coach can help your student reach their full potential. You can also call 206-632-9497 and use promo code EDGE and get a free college success guide.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
The Attention Talk Network has over 450 interviews and more than 210 hours of programming, which is overwhelming if you think about it. That's why I've made my list top 10 favorite Attention Talk radio interviews. Download the list at www.digcoaching.com/ATR.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. We're here with Penny Williams talking about hearing your ADHD child's truth or observing your ADHD child's truth, which is not necessarily the easiest thing to do because there's no shortcut on this. It's literally about observation. And one of the things that when it comes to observation, I find interesting, Penny, is the notion of motivation. And I think it was Dr. Roberto Olivardio one time said, you know, if you weren't motivated, you'd be dead. In other words, everything that you do is motivated. Like everything you ever done is because you were motivated to do it. And often I think parents will look at and say that child is not motivated. And again, I think it's they need to understand that that's not your child's truth. If your child is maybe teen is watching Netflix and not doing their homework, they're actually motivated to do that. Or they might be motivated. Another story I remember hearing years ago was this ADHD kid that was dyslexic. And every Wednesday they made somebody stand up in class and read. And this kid one day by accident, his glasses got broken in gym and it was his day to read and he got out of it. And I guess the rotation was like every 3 weeks. And after a few months had gone by, the kid apparently had broken his glasses several times. Turns out on the Wednesday that he was supposed to read, and his parent was down in the principal's office going on about how this kid was not motivated and stuff. And the principal basically said, well, I actually think this kid really is motivated. He's motivated to break his glasses because he doesn't want to be humiliated in front of the class. And I think that that's an example as a parent is your kid's – even though it might be something they're motivated to do what they're doing, and you've got to observe it and you've got to be witness to it and say, I wonder why my kid is breaking his glasses, if he will, because maybe there's a good reason because of the humiliation or whatever there. And then again, meet them where they are. Now, we've hit this with a dead horse, but I just keep wanting to give these examples for parents to be able to understand how you observe this. To me, the process is you actually are looking at something. You go, well, what exactly is motivation? You look at the fundamentals of it. And then you go and you take a look at the situation and say, how is this playing out as opposed to prejudging it as a process? Right. Have you ever thought about the process of observation and what you go through? Because even I've just described what I do and I can define it. I'm not so sure everybody else is or could, but just interested in your thoughts.
I think, you know, for me, it's a lot of asking why, which we already talked about a little bit.
Yep.
Why is he breaking his glasses? Because, you know, as Ross Green says, who I love, kids do well if they can. So
yep.
If your child is not doing well, you must be asking yourself why. It's just so super important to approach it from that perspective. You know, not looking at broken glasses and being angry about it and thinking that your child isn't motivated to take care of his glasses or he doesn't care about it, even though you've explained to him 100 times about how much he should care about it and how much they cost to replace. And, you know, it's
yep.
about understanding the why behind the behavior. And in talking about motivation, Dr. William Dodson talks about how the ADHD brain is motivated by interest and urgency, not by importance. And I hear parents time and time again complaining about their kids with ADHD not being motivated. And, you know, they're talking about it in terms of doing homework and, you know, going to school or doing well in school, or being outgoing and wanting to participate in social activities. And it's that those things are not of interest to them. I just had a coaching call with a parent earlier today, and she said, you know, my big struggle is that my 9-year-old isn't really motivated to do his homework. If I have to walk away and attend to another child, he's gone. He's not doing his homework. He's not even there anymore. And we had that conversation about expectations and understanding how his brain works and the fact that homework is not going to be a motivation for him. He's not interested in doing that work. And that's a reality. That's part of his truth and his story. And so then it's what strategies can you use to help him a little bit with motivation, breaks and praise and rewards and things like that, but also to implement the appropriate expectation as a parent. Because, you know, that's what's really so important about discovering and really listening to your child's truth, is that then that should be your compass in your parenting approach with your child, you know, making the appropriate expectations. And I think it's important too to say that, you know, understanding in general what ADHD is not understanding your child's personal truth. Because how ADHD affects my son is going to be completely different from how it affects your child. You know, there are some overarching things that will be kind of similar for everyone, but there's so many nuances that it really is a very individual thing.
And, you know, Penny, it's funny because back with DSM-4 days, a peer of mine, Dan Pruitt, there were three different, and back in DSM-4 days, there was three different kinds of ADHD with different symptom combinations to get them. And he actually did the math, and there was over 18,000, like 600 and like 57 different combinations of the symptoms that could get you the diagnosis of ADHD that didn't take into consideration the severity of the symptoms and or the comorbid conditions. And we've done a couple shows on that, really just to outline and just highlight the fact that when you've seen one person with ADHD, you've seen one person with ADHD. It runs completely different.
Exactly.
And I wanted to kind of piggyback on what you had just talked about and just run a what-if scenario. Again, I'm trying to give a lens for parents to begin to view with from an observational perspective to kind of empower them. And let's say hypothetically the story that I told earlier about a kid being a verbal processor and not to talk is not to think is actually true, and it's true for your kid. And you walk in, you sit down to do homework with them, and you're doing some stuff with them. And in that situation, you're talking to them and they're thinking out loud. They're going back and forth with you. Then you leave the room. Now they got no way to talk about. Now they're actually expected to think. Well, if they can't think by not talking, the structure just went right outside the room. And if the expectation is just to try harder, now it's kind of oppressive as opposed to, well, why is he talking? Well, he has to think out loud. Maybe we should come up with a structure where a friend comes over, or you redesign that environment to make that happen. And in that environment, I can hear a lot of parents say, yes, but society doesn't work that way. He's just going to have to figure out how to do this. And I go, that sometimes goes back to their truth. It's not that they won't go do it on their own. It's they can't. And if you acknowledge that they can't, you can then move forward and do something about it, as opposed to, as I say, shooting all over yourself, where you, trying harder would have worked, it would have worked a gazillion times over. And when you start shooting all over yourself, to me, it's like, it's how many more times you want to prove what you're trying to do is not going to make any sense. Again, it goes back to making those observations about the fundamental truths of what's real in this world and not trying just to make it up or to pay attention to something that just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. I hate the phrase try harder or work harder, because our kids are already trying and working so hard. As we talked about earlier, they are putting in a monumental amount of effort to try to come close to expectation.
Yep.
So they're already trying hard. That's not working.
Yep.
What's next? And I think a lot of parenting kids with ADHD is about creativity. I mean, you have to start really thinking about,
yes,
as in that example, all the other possibilities. And it may not be the typical way that kids do homework, or, you know, but our kids aren't typical. Society has these overarching expectations, but every one of us has an individual truth. We have our own unique constellation of weaknesses and strengths and struggles, and that really, we all need to pay more attention to that rather than fitting in and meeting these societal expectations.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that whole trying harder thing, we all as parents and especially teachers, that's where my son runs up against the wall constantly, is with teachers with that. We all really need to be mindful and catch ourselves. And, you know, if you're about to say try harder or work harder, that's a really good signal to you as a parent or a teacher to reevaluate and come up with a new strategy. You're already there.
Yeah, so you use the word creativity, and I want to give some tangible examples of what some of that looks like. So because we say creativity, it's like, oh, wow, I know what that is, but actually to do that. We interviewed Carol Barnier many, many years ago. She homeschooled her kids, and she told this story, which I thought was fascinating. When her son was trying to learn the times tables, they would go to the pool, and what she would do is she would say 8 times 8, and she would throw a rock in the pool, and he would dive in to get the rock, and when he came back, he had to tell her, oh, it's 64. And that kinesthetic movement and going back and forth, she said he learned it in record time, but she had to think outside of the box because the kinesthetic movement and the other types of things that was of interest to him was the things that actually enabled him to do it. Another story, Dr. Roberto Olivardi, by accident, discovered one day he was going to work, and back in those days he had forgotten his Walkman, and he decided to read on the subway. And when he got done, he realized, I've read a lot. Normally it's hard because he has ADD and dyslexia. So he went home and timed himself reading at home and reading on the subway, and he found that he reads 7 times faster on the subway. So he would get on the subway up in Boston and ride it from one end to the other when he would have to do that. Another individual that I heard coaching a high school kid one time is rhythm, for whatever reason, really kind of helped this kid focus. And they bought one of those metronomes, like the thing that you learn music with. And they would set the metronome when he would read in order to give that rhythm for him and to keep that time. And for whatever reason, it was a truth for him because he could focus because the beat kind of kept him going and staying on task. Again, all of these are not so obvious solutions. You're not going to find them in the self-help section of the bookstore, but a level of creativity and observation is what brought these truths out. So again, tangible
and
examples to help people think.
Yeah. When my son was in elementary school, we did a lot of those sort of things for homework. You know, I modified assignments to work for him and his learning style. He also has dysgraphia, so his handwriting is illegible. So we did a lot of alternatives to that. When we did spelling words, I would get spaghetti and macaroni, and he would spell them out visually with dried pasta.
Yep.
Or we had Play-Doh, and I had a whole set of the alphabet and numbers in cookie cutters, and we used them just for that Play-Doh, and we'd do spelling and math with Play-Doh. He liked to sit on one of those hot balls that you bounce around the house on, and I would quiz him on things that way. I mean, there's so many ways to be more tactile and have more movement and, you know, the other ways that kids learn and bring that into it. And that should be true for school, too. You know, one example with the dysgraphia, my son's spelling test, he would know how to spell a word, but he would get them wrong because the teacher couldn't read what he had written. So he was given the accommodation that if the teacher couldn't read some of it, he would be able to spell it verbally to her. And if he spelled it verbally correctly, he got it correct. Because that was part of his truth. That was his way of learning, his way of showing his knowledge. That's how he could do it successfully.
Yep.
We could pigeonhole him into the truth and expectation of the entire class, and he's not going to succeed. But when we start looking at him as an individual and giving him those opportunities to work with his truth, then he can succeed.
Yep.
And it's the same for everything. You know, you can translate it to so many other things and really to everything in our parenting.
Yep, absolutely. Well, Penny, this is it's been a thrill having you on. It's been a fascinating conversation.
Thank you.
It's just for the parents out there, I realize is that you're going to sit here and like, okay, Jeff, that's really great. But the key really is it's really about awareness. If you're not paying attention to the right thing, you're going to get the wrong solution. And today our focus is to get you to stop and observe your child's truths, because if you really observe their truths and understand why they're doing something, now you're paying attention to the right thing. And I can guarantee you, you're in a much better position to have an impact on trying to find something that will work. So with that, Penny, before we close it down, any last comments or any things to share? Or are we good?
The only other thing I would say, just to piggyback on what you just said, is not only is observing and accounting for your child's truth helping you to be a more effective parent for them, but it's also going to reduce your stress as a parent when you're more effective. So it's a change for yourself and for your entire family. It's not just about benefiting your child. It changes that whole dynamic for everyone, and it's really, really powerful stuff.
I'm really glad you mentioned that. That's spot on. So, Penny, again, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you. It was great.
Everybody, check out her website, Parenting ADHD and Autism Academy.com. We hope you've enjoyed it. Catch us next week for another great edition of Attention Talk Radio. Take care.